to Keldabe Talk Radio, the official podcast of the Mandalorian Mercs. We're a costume organization dedicated to charity efforts around the globe, attending events in Mandalorian armor we've built by hand. Here on the show, we'll keep you up to date with the latest fan community news. Visit our website at www.mandalorianmercs.com.
Hello and welcome to an episode of Keldabe Talk Radio. I am your host, Crow, and with me on this edition is Thaxos.
Hey.
And Misha Kitty.
Hey, everyone.
And this is a particularly special episode for us because we have a very special guest from California. He has voiced James Vega from Mass Effect 3. He has been the Iron Bull from Dragon Age Inquisition. He was in Wing Commander, Scooby-Doo, all kinds of awesome films. But most importantly to us, he was, and still is, Kanan Jarrus from Star Wars Rebels, Freddie Prinze Jr.
Good evening, good evening. How you guys doing tonight?
Very good.
Really good.
And, yeah, again, thank you for coming on with us. This is pretty freaking awesome.
My pleasure. Thanks for calling Wing Commander awesome, even though it wasn't. I appreciate that.
There's a pretty good following of that. I was really surprised how many of my friends, you know, said, ask about Wing Commander, because they loved it.
I've never met any of these people. That's
come
that's
to
awesome.
Florida. Come to Florida.
Yeah, right? That's where y'all hang out?
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, I mean,
sit Florida. Down and talk about the old Kilrathi days.
Very nice.
Right. I also love that we're in the age where the names that are used on our little hidden radio broadcast here, podcast, they're all like secret code names. There's no, like, back in the day it would be like, it's Jay and the Bean, and they would do like, it was their version of what we have now, right? Like, they never understood like the whole sci-fi angle of it. So it was like, it's Crazy Mike and Natalie in the morning, and their show would be Cornball. But nowadays, literally, sci-fi has taken over so much that I could literally use my gamer tag and people would be like, oh yeah, I know who that is.
What is your gamer tag?
I will never tell. I did once, and I had to change it because I had like 4,700 friend invites while I was trying to play a Grand Theft Auto session, and I literally turned it off and like changed my account.
Are we talking console? Or...
Console, Xbox. I had to get off PCs, man. I used to play World of Warcraft, and that was such a soul drainer for 6 years of my life, because the class I played was in high demand back then. It was a dwarf healer. Mm-hmm. I called him Dwarvish because it was funny. But back then they had like a spell that only that class could have, and at the point in the game we were at, there was a raid. I don't remember. I think it was called Arcatraz. And you needed this one spell called a Fear Ward, and there were only like two classes that had it, mine and the Shaman class. And so everybody, if I missed a raid, they'd literally like, it was like you were late for work or something. It became like a full-time job, and they're like, you really let us down. I'm like, man, I'm trying to have sex with my wife. Like, why are you giving me a hard time about video games right now? And so finally, I had to quit. It just became too much of a soul drainer. And you could do a 12-hour session and not even realize it. And you just, half of a day of your life was gone. It was like you were Wesley in the Princess Bride, and they stole a year of your life. Like, that's what World of Warcraft was.
Well, while we're on the topic of video games here, you've recently gotten into voice work, like in kind of a deep way now. You started off with Mass Effect 3. Was that your first voice role?
Yeah. Well, for video games, yeah, I did a couple like animated movies, but I never really, you know, I always played video games. I never thought of trying to be in one. And when Mass Effect came to me, it wasn't at a time when I was passionate about voiceover work. And I had so much fun doing it and voicing a character for a game that I consider Mass Effect 2 a top 5 game of all ever. Mm-hmm. And I played video games since they first came out. And just based on the change that it made in the industry, the amount of sales it had with having no multiplayer whatsoever in a generation where you couldn't get a game financed if you didn't have multiplayer, and the whole choose your own adventure angle that they literally just put on steroids in the second one and just made it amazing. Like, literally, like, that's up there with Legend of Zelda and Metroid for me. So, you know, to get to do that, and I knew exactly what they wanted. Like, anytime there was a line, whether they gave me the note and set up the scene or not, I knew exactly where the characters were. I knew exactly what kind of people they were dealing with and exactly how to deal with them. And so Mac, who was he was the main guy on that, and Caroline, who's BioWare's main voice director, who I worked with on Dragon Age also, you know, we just kind of had a real quick rapport, and they knew in 5 minutes that I was a legit gamer. And so once I did it one time, I was like, look, anytime you guys do another game, let me know. I'll come in, I'll audition for it, I'll lay some weird stuff down, and if you dig it, cool, and if not, you know, let me know and I'll do something different, because I really respect the games you make. And they came at me with Iron Bull, and the voice was more sort of linebackery. It was more like workout guy at Venice Beach, like, hey, how you doing, bro? What's up? And I booked the job on that voice, and I didn't want to do that in the game because I play games and I just didn't think it would fit Okunari. But I knew they wanted Okunari that sort of broke the statue that they were stuck in based on the Sten stereotype. Sten was this character who was very stoic and didn't commit a lot of emotion to what he said because the Kuhn demanded him to live a certain way. The Kuhn is like the Quran or the Holy Bible or whatever you believe in. And so they wanted a character who sort of broke that mold, kind of Americanized, but it just didn't feel right. And so we came up with this sort of weird version of Winston Churchill and Thunder and Pete from the Mickey Mouse Club and just sort of combined them into one voice. And all of a sudden, you know, it just started to sound more the way he sounds in the game. And then as we progressed, the voice got stronger and stronger, and we would re-record some things. Still a couple lines that I felt I wish I could have had another crack at, but overall I really loved voicing that guy. I don't know if there'll be another Dragon Age game, but I hope he makes it in one, because that was the most fun I had. That was more fun than doing Mass Effect 3.
So between the two, if you had to pick between Vega and the Bull, who would you pick?
Bull
all day.
Bull. I just have so much more for, like, Vega is a good soldier, and he respects the lead character, Shepard, and knows about his sort of his history. They even did this anime that I ended up voicing too, that was sort of a prequel to that. It was like the story of James Vega and Liara Tassoni before the war started. And I ended up voicing it. They paid you like $5 to do the job, but I enjoyed the character so much with Vega that I really wanted to explore more with him, because at the end of the day, he's a loyal soldier. He's got some color, he's got some cockiness to him, but you don't get a big time history as to who he is and what makes him tick, you know, outside of his grandma's eggs, right? But with Iron Bull, you get everything, man. You get everything. You know why he left, why you know his real name. You know, you can have this incredible, you know, relationship with him. And if you turn your back on his guys and you are having a relationship, they have this amazing scene that I have nothing to do with because it was all in the animation, where he just looks at you like you're, excuse my language, but flipping dead. And you know, like, so there's genuine repercussions for your actions, like in the old school choose your own adventure books. And that's why I love BioWare games, is there is accountability in a video game, which is psychotic because no kids buy into accountability anymore. But in their games, there are. If you hose somebody, they're dead, you know what I mean? Or they're going to try to kill you. Deus Ex did it a little bit, but it was much more predictable than I felt the BioWare story was. So, you know, that's the place that I really love. I don't read for many video games, and I'm happy with the job that I got. But if BioWare does something, I always want to be made aware of it, because it's a game I'd actually play, so I definitely want to voice it.
Yeah, I got to say, that was one of that, like, I was sort of weighing out the options when we get to that scene in Dragon Age, where you're either have to, you know, sacrifice for the good of a Canary alliance, or you got to save the Chargers.
Yeah.
And sorry if there are any spoilers, but if you haven't played the game yet, you've made a mistake. But yeah, you get to that scene, I was like, oh, but yeah, that alliance sounds so cool, but Bull's gonna be pissed.
Nope. I'm glad sticking with those guys. Hard, man. I'm glad that choice was hard. You know, Patrick Weeks, you know, kind of put all the beats there, but you can still screw it up. You know what I mean? If you didn't put the work into making people like that character before that choice happens. Because I've been in games where, you know, you're gonna lose somebody, and you're like, yeah, whatever, I don't care. And, you know what I mean? Or the worst case scenario, that character annoys me. Like, that's worst case scenario. That's a total fail on our end as creative people. Those characters exist. But to hear how many people responded well to that moment, I was like, wow, man, they really put together a cool character, a cool script. And, you know, I really tried to make the most of those opportunities that they gave me. And then there's a lot in there for Bull to charm you. You know what I mean? It's harder for Blackwall to pull off, you know, the guy love. Like, the women love him because he's Ryan Phillippe, right? He's introverted. You know what I mean? He's James Dean. If you don't know James Dean, I'll just throw Ryan Phillippe at you. But, you know, it's all the angst and anger's inside. He won't let it out. And girls are like, I'll be the one that'll get it out. You won't, by the way. But girls like to believe that. And that's Blackwall. Whereas Iron Bull from, like, Jump Street is like, here's who I am. Here's what I do. Here's what's going on. If you have him in a party with Blackwall in the early parts of the game, Iron Bull basically tells you straight up, this guy's not a Grey Warden, and you can't believe a word he says. If you really listen to what he's saying, he challenges Blackwall's fighting style. He asks him where he learned that. You know what I mean? And this is Bull's job when he worked for the Kuhn. I mean, this is literally what he did and still does if you allow him to. And he's telling you this, and you know, only a couple people like on Twitter ever kind of caught on to it and hit me up on it, but he tells you what's going on with just about everybody if you pay attention. Whereas Vega would be dense as hell, right? Vega would know. He'd be like, nah, he seems cool. Yeah, she seems cool. Like, he wants everybody to get along. But I'll put it this way. Like, Vega's a beta personality. If you compliment him, it means a lot. If you insult him, it hurts. And Bull's an Omega. If you would compliment Bull, he'd be like, what do you want from me? Why are you doing that? He'd be much more, and the Alpha doesn't care, right? The Alpha's Kobe Bryant, where you're like, man, you're the best player since Michael Jordan. He's like, yeah, I know. He doesn't want to hear it. Like, that's the Alpha. And those are the three. And most actors are betas, by the way. Most actors are like, oh my God, they hate me. Oh my God, they love me. And it's this emotional roller coaster. And that's why 99% of them are insane. But Bull is definitely the Omega personality. He's the long-term thinker.
What got you into voicing for Star Wars? Like, how'd you hear about Rebels, and how'd you get involved in voicing, you know, one of the first characters we hear?
They keep everything really secret. I signed with a voiceover agency after I did Mass Effect 3, because I really just dug it, and didn't really see eye to eye with the voiceover people at my theatrical agency, and these people seemed much more passionate about it, whereas... You know, a lot of times if you're a film actor, they won't even bring the opportunities your way if it's not a big money job, right? Because it's business. It's show business. And you can't crap on them for that. You just have to stay on them because it's their job is to make money, not to keep you creatively happy. So I signed with this other company, and I said, look, in the beginning, just send me everything you got, and I'll let you know what I hate, what I like, and what I'm in the middle on, and that'll give you guys a sense as to... You know, what kind of stuff I'm willing to do. And it's a new process. You got to exercise new muscles. You know, I don't have the ability to cross my arms or use body language to make you feel like I'm making you earn my trust. Or, you know, if you tell a crappy joke and the girl laughs and puts her hand on your hand, you know, that's a sign. Like, you, and as actors, we use that. When you're in a booth, you don't have any of that. You have to sort of create things, and if you're smart, you talk to the director and the animator and find out what the character's doing in those, you know, critical moments so that you can add to it. If you're smart, you ask them about soundtrack and music, and is there going to be a big crescendo here? I don't want to overpower it. You know, like, these are all things you have to look at big picture, right? You think of your favorite movies, you think about what made them great, and that hopefully is the type of stuff that you're going to try to bring to the table. So, like, if you watch Godfather 2, which was one of my favorite movies ever, you know, that music on those certain scenes is so powerful that there's no dialogue, and there doesn't have to be. In our pilot, just the very beginning, not Siege of Lothal, but from season 1, you know, we have an entire chase scene with no music. And most of, I can't even think of another like action sequence that doesn't. But when we're on those speeders chasing Ezra, like there's a whole segment that's just completely score free. And those are the types of little things that if you really pay attention to, I think make the show special. And it has that sort of old school feel. And Dave spoke on this a lot, but like our original, the lenses that the program allows the animators to use and the shots and the angles, it doesn't really allow them to exist outside shots that have existed within the original Star Wars universe. So it has this sort of, you know, magic quality to it. So as an actor, you have to be very careful that you're not overplaying stuff. You wanna go big because it's animation and you wanna see how far you can go with it. But it's good to go one direction so that you can pull back. And by take five or take six, maybe you have something that everybody's like, oh, we didn't even think of that. But all that other crap comes into play. The music, the animation, you know, how big is Kanan's eyebrow going to be in this scene? You know, all those things come into play. The lazy actor doesn't pay attention to any of that crap. They go in and they say their lines, and they can, honestly, man, there are some people that do this and they still do a great job. You wish that they would do more. You wish that they would invest the time, but, you know, there's a million athletes out there that you go, oh, they got all the talent in the world. And if they'd only do, you know what I mean? Like, they're still really good and really awesome at baseball or whatever sport it is. So you let it go, but it certainly would always help and embrace. Our core cast is all really hardworking. We all sort of look to each other, not only for process, but for the discipline, for the amount of energy that we're putting into it. And everybody tries to really match each other, and it's a lot different than, you know, most shows or movies. And I've been on projects where it was all love and groovy, but it's fewer and farther between in film, I think, than it is in voiceover. Voiceover, it's more of like a family vibe, I think. It's not like I've done that many.
So how do you connect with Kanan? I mean, obviously you're the voice of him, but how do you find yourself kind of preparing to get into character as him?
Well, most of it has been sort of laid out for you before we even recorded the pilot for season one. I mean, we really sort of sat down and at length with Greg Weissman and with Dave, we really sort of laid out all the major historical points that helped shape these characters. So right away you have a past to draw on. I had the benefit of seeing everything that Star Wars has ever done, from the original trilogy to the second trilogy to the Clone Wars to the first Force Unleashed to the second really crappy Force Unleashed to watching my friend play Battlefront while I would play Warcraft, although I never played Battlefront, but I saw everything he did. So I, you know, when they explain a world to me, I get it. I'm there already. I know what the armor looks like. I've seen Pre Vizsla fight Darth Maul more than you guys. You know what I mean? And like, I have a 5-year-old daughter. That's all she wants to watch. You know what I mean? So it's really she's a good girl. It's real easy for me to kind of draw on things because it's been laid out. And as our season developed, and especially after season one ended, Dave got much more one-on-one. And I won't speak for everyone, but with me, we really spoke about the things he was going to go through in season two, the high points, the low points, and everything in between. So it's very laid out. And then on top of that, in those sort of key moments that are going to be sort of the new history, right, the episodes that you guys will be watching on a week-to-week basis, any of those big moments, I try to bring as much of my life experience or the life experience that I've sort of stolen from people in my life, and I apply that as often as possible. It's not hard for me to think about what a 16-year-old would feel like in the middle of a war when the man who basically raised me was a 16-year-old in the Vietnam War. He lied about his age so he could get in because all his brothers were there and he didn't want to feel like a punk. So he lied about his age and his last name and he got in and he did 4 tours there and was the only one of his brothers to come home. And so he had a very similar life to Kanan in that regard, where he was alone. A lot of bad stuff happened to him over there. The the sergeant that was taking care of him, he was a gunner on a helicopter, and the pilot got shot, and their chopper went down, and everyone died but him, and he was alone in the jungle, you know, and literally had to work his way back. And when he did, he was in the Army at the time, the Reconnaissance Marines, which was a program the CIA and the Marine Corps were involved with together, recruited him because he was a survivalist, he understood the jungle, and they saw a young, impressionable young man, as the United States government often does, and they recruited him in, and so he had to do a whole lot more stuff. And if you ever Google what reconnaissance Marines had to do in the Vietnam War, then you'll get a sense of some of the baggage and pain that he had to carry the rest of his life. So, not to get too deep, I'll leave it at that. If you want to do the research, you may do the research. If you want to be a passive researchist and let the information come to you, I respect that as well. But I try to apply all of that to Kanan, and I remember what my uncle was like in his you know, 20s, and well, not his 20s, but in his 30s and 40s, and how he was with me as a kid. You know, he was a black belt, and he was the first guy to introduce me to my godfather, Bob Wall, who was, to call him a black belt is an insult. He literally trained Bruce Lee when Bruce came to America. And was one of the baddest dudes on earth. His best friends were Chuck Norris and Gene LaBelle. Gene LaBelle was the guy who trained Ronda Rousey's mother, who was a world champion in judo, and the first man to ever choke me out. So, you know, he taught me those skills the way Kanan teaches Ezra. And Dave likes... sort of, it goes beyond cocky Kanan. He likes when Kanan sort of breaks the Jedi character and is sort of mean to Ezra and is like, yeah, I wish that Jedi mind trick worked on you. You know what I mean? He likes that. And that's how my uncle was, you know, it was tough love. And so a lot of what you see with Ezra is, you know, tough love, big brother to little brother. But if you notice any time that it's that, there's no growth in the Jedi relationship. It's only when he sort of faces his own failures and talks about, yo, I got to remember this stuff. It's not about try or we are going to fail. I'm going to train you. It's not until he actually follows the rules that you see Jedi growth. And that's how we sort of let Kanan float that line, is because he doesn't do everything the Jedi way, but he pays for it every time. And it always brings him back to the thing Yoda said, which is, you know, master you are now. Which is him challenging, you know, Kanan, basically, and saying it's time for you to step up, because surely Kanan is not a master by any definition, even though there's no Jedi Academy to rate that. If your Padawan doesn't pass the trials, you don't get to be a master. That's why Vader's technically not a master, because none of his apprentices ever, you know, became the one. They never passed their trials, and the last one quit, for crying out loud. So even though he's the man and he's Lord Vader, he technically doesn't get the title master because of the code. But Kanan certainly wouldn't at any level. I said this at Star Wars Celebration, but by the end of season one, my argument would be, you know, he's passed two of the five Jedi trials probably at that point. You could argue for a third, but I don't believe the trial of flesh has really been passed in that torture scene, because that's every Jedi gets tortured. A little torture is good for the soul. But he's on his way. I'd say he's on his way to becoming a knight.
When did you first get into Star Wars? Like, when did you first watch it?
You know, I'm old enough that that cable was an actual cable connected to the remote control, and it had I think 20 or 18 buttons on it, and if you pushed the HBO button and the button that was two buttons to the right of that at the same time, you could get HBO for free, but it was no sound. It would be in color, but no sound. And if you went two buttons to the left, then you would get sound, but you couldn't see the picture. It would fuzz out. And so I watched Star Wars with no sound for the very first time. And then I watched it like 2 days later with no picture, but all the sound. So I finally could like understand what was going on. And literally, that was my first experience. I think I was probably 5 or 6 years old. It was 1980 or 1981. So I was probably 4 when I saw Star Wars. And then when Empire came out, I actually got to go to the theaters for Empire. And that was my favorite of all of them, of anything, of Clone Wars, of Rebels, of any of the games. Empire's always been my favorite thing of Star Wars.
Ditto.
Awesome. Yeah, I think that goes for most of us, especially considering The Mandalorian's Boba Fett was introduced in Empire.
That's true. Although, you know, Boba's, you know, to call him a Mando is a weird, it's still, it's a weird, I don't know, man. The armor's gone through so much. There's a lot of history, but that armor's just gone through too much, man.
What for you made Empire the best movie that you...
It just is the most honest, I think, of all six. It's, you know, no matter... You can be as disciplined and work as hard and do everything the right way, and the bad guys can still win. And I think Star Wars has always done a great job, better than anyone, really, especially in modern times now, of telling an honest story. And the good guys in real life don't always win, and you can't solve all the problems as quickly as the Huxtables did. Like, it's just that's not how the real world works. There's always people that if you don't watch and if you're not careful, that, you know, absolute power will corrupt absolutely. And, you know, our United States government is a wonderful, you know, picture of what Palpatine control is. It, you know, I've never met a I've rolled jujitsu a lot, and so I gotta, you know, whatever time I spend beating up my body, I gotta spend time healing it. And I've been working with a masseuse since I broke my back, who takes great care of me and really keeps me going on the mats. And we talk a lot about philosophy and things, and he goes, you should run for president. And I said, dude, I've never met a politician that didn't have the lean and hungry look, which if you're familiar with Shakespeare, then you know what that means. But you can't elect ambitious human beings into political office ever. And like, if people don't know that, then don't vote. Like, you have to find a selfless politician. Good luck. But you have to find a selfless... They shot the last one in the head. But you have to find a selfless human being who's going to not put their own ego before the needs of the people. If you want to get a president to pass a bill, you just say, this will define your legacy. And they'll say, oh, yes, this will define my legacy. I sound like Vince McMahon. This will define my legacy. But yes, goddamn, we got to do this. I used to work for him, so his voice always pops in my head. But you know, and literally, like, you can convince any politician of anything as long as you put legacy on the end of it. And I've met enough of them, believe me. In this town, you meet plenty, and I've never met one I would vote for. So, you know, it's, to me, Empire represented the best of humanity, and it's still lost. And that's awesome. It's terrible, but it's awesome. It lets people know, like, yeah, man, you can be on the right side of things, and at the end of your fight you can end up in carbonite, and that sucks. And it's a legit lesson to learn, you know what I mean? So I've always loved it for that. I've always felt it was one of the most honest stories that Hollywood's ever told. And that may sound weird, but if you understand my philosophy on you know, the bad guys or the good guys don't always win, then it makes complete and total sense. So yeah, so that's my favorite one, and that's why.
So we asked our listeners if they had any questions for you, and one that came up several times was regarding the new season. And I know you probably can't answer this, but everybody kind of wants to know if there's going to be any more Mandalorians coming in or any new Mandalorian characters.
Listen, I'll say this. In season one, you don't get a strong sense of everybody on the Ghost. Season one is about building up Kanan and building up Ezra, so that these are two Jedi that kids and fans of Star Wars of all ages can really get behind. So think of the Inquisitor as that warm-up fight for the young up-and-coming fighter who's about to take on the champ, right? And that's who the Jason Isaacs character represented. It was a legitimate threat, but... would he have lasted 10 seconds against Ahsoka? No chance. But in our world, he was a legit threat who was going to make Kanan better, faster. Sabine didn't get a lot of love. You didn't get a lot of history on her character. Nor did you on Hera. Nor did you on Zeb. Season 2, and Dave said this, so this isn't a spoiler, we are doing many more episodes than we did season 1. I think we did, what, 14 season 1? Yeah. And we're doing, I think... this might be a spoiler, but I think we're doing like 22 or even more this year. So we're telling a much more in-depth story. Think Clone Wars season if you want to think more the type of depth that we're going to go into. And season two is going to focus a lot on the history of the other characters on the Ghost. One of those characters obviously being Sabine Wren. And I'll say this, her and Kanan handle some business, and you learn a lot about Sabine's history, which is going to be a huge surprise to everyone that that is familiar with the Star Wars universe. They're all going to get to sort of delve into their Star Wars books and put the dots together. And there'll be, you know, some other people that we have to deal with as well. But everybody's backstory is going to get explained. And Sabine's backstory is clearly Mandalorian, so it's not going to be unexplored.
Oh, man.
Awesome.
and Sabine is badass. Like, people that just think she's a graffiti artist, Sabine in season two has all my favorite lines for the whole season are Sabine's. they're insane. They're unreal. They're things you've wanted Mandalorians to say forever. And she does. And when people see kind of what she's gone through, they'll see why she's an artist. They'll see why she paints instead of kills. Because if she didn't, you know, I'll equate it to, like, there's a great play called, I really don't want to mess this up, and I probably will. But I think it was called The Dutchman. And this very famous African-American playwright wrote it. And it's about a black man on a subway with a white woman, and it's the whole play takes place on the car, and they're the only two people on the train car. And it goes from her being afraid of him, to her coming on to him rejecting her, to him accepting her, to her basically crying rape, and the typical treatment of black people in our country. But she talks about, or he talks about, art with black people, and the great great jazz artist Charlie Parker. And he's yelling at this girl because she's like, please don't kill me. And he's like, why do you think I would kill you? And he starts talking about murder, and he's an artist. And he says, I wonder if Charlie Parker would have played one sweet note if he could have just committed one sweet act of murder. And in that line, it sort of describes the artist's plight. Like, how many people would Picasso have killed? Or better yet, Soutine, who painted more sick and disgusting stuff. To some people's eye, to others it was beautiful. To mine it was a bit weird. But if Soutine had not painted all of that, how many people would he have killed? Here's a more contemporary comparison, because not everybody wants to go down a trip on art history lane. I'm really glad whoever wrote the movie Seven wrote the movie Seven, because if they didn't, I really worry what they would have done to all those poor people. Like, those are, artists need that cathartic release, or they do bad things to themselves. My father's an example of that, or, you know, a million other comedians that have walked that tough path, or a million painters or musicians, you know, Jimi Hendrix, or, you know, more recent people, River Phoenix, you know what I mean? Like, people hurt, artists hurt, they want to be loved, they want their art to be loved, their art defines them, suddenly their art isn't loved, suddenly they feel no love, and it's trouble from there. They find drugs, they find alcohol, they find, you know, hookers, whatever their thing is, they find it, and it's never like broccoli, right? Like, they never find something that's really good for you. It's not like, oh, I found hiking. It's always like cocaine and heroin. But that's the plight of the suffering artist. And I think people are going to see, and it's crazy to say that and hear Disney in the same philosophy, but understand, like, Disney kills Bambi's mom in the first 5 minutes. You go ahead, sit down, and try to watch The Fox and the Hound again. Just try to watch it and not hate yourself at the end of that movie. Like, even Frozen, like, the parents croak, man. Like, they kill everybody. Like, Cinderella is horrible. Her dad dies right away. He married a gold digger who completely treats her like crap, does the candy spelling move, and is like, sorry, Tori, you get nothing and you'll like it. And Cinderella has to deal with that, you know what I mean, to the point where she's talking to animals like a crazy person. So, you know, Disney isn't as afraid as people think to go, you know, more of a PG-13 route. They're just smart about it, so people don't realize what they're watching, you know what I mean? So Sabine is definitely, you're going to see a lot more of why she is who she is, why she's quiet at times, why she just wants to paint and be left alone. And you're going to see what happens when she doesn't get to do that.
Looking forward to it.
Yeah, it's a great episode, man. It's more than one. It's, your guys are going to like it.
Excellent. Awesome. So while we're talking other characters, I want to ask you about how the character Kanan thinks, what his thoughts are on Ezra and Ahsoka coming up in season two.
Well, I mean, I don't know if you can, as far as them being together as a couple, no, they're not. She's like 15 years older than him. So if that's what they're talking about, I would say I don't think Kanan would ever think about that. It's an individual thing. So the way he's looking at Ezra is much more teacher to student this season. And when you, I mean, you hear him in the trailer, and people have seen the Siege of Lothal now. So they, when he starts talking about, you know, the fear and the hate, and you've seen the trailer of the other Inquisitors now, it gets real, and it gets real fast. So training is of the utmost importance, and there's no time for games. And when Ezra acts immature, which he's gonna because he's a teenager, Kanan gets on him. So yeah. Their relationship at times is going to be strained, and then you get to bring Rex into the mix, who is a friggin' clone, who Kanan's not going to like at all, regardless of what Ahsoka says. And she is how we sort of find our way there, obviously. Yeah. That's not a spoiler, but if people didn't know that, just put two and two together, and now you know. but regardless of what Ahsoka says, and Kanan trusts her, they killed his master. You know what I mean? So there's not going to be a solid relationship there, and Rex is going to have to earn it, and Ezra's going to see that. And like most kids do, Rex is going to come off like the cool uncle and is a hell of a soldier himself, and has been a leader of men and has genuinely earned the right to lead men. I think we've seen Rex's soul and what kind of a man he is more than any other clone. And Ezra's going to recognize that, and he'll use those guys against each other sometimes, the way teenagers do. So, you know, that's more the Kanan and Ezra relationship. And the relationship, I mean, I can joke and be like, yeah, well, Ahsoka loves Kanan, and it's this, you know, love triangle between Hera and Ahsoka. She ends up giving me her lightsabers, and it's really embarrassing. No, she... That'll make Ashley mad.
No, I think they meant more with regards to just the fact that Ezra so far has only ever had the one influence of Kanan being the Jedi that he knows. And now he's got a second.
Ahsoka's never going to be... How's this? Ahsoka will be to Ezra what Plo Koon, to a lesser degree, what Plo Koon was to Ahsoka.
Okay.
So... he has experience with her. He teaches Ahsoka lessons throughout, but he's by no means her one-on-one instructor.
Yeah.
Yes? So that should explain it a little bit. I mean, for us not to learn from the wisdom of Ahsoka, and by the way, that goes for Kanan too, not just Ezra, would be stupid, considering all the crap she's gone through. You have to remember, they don't know everything about her. They don't know that she's the only Jedi ever to have walked away. They don't know that. Yeah. So it's not like he has a file on her. You know what I mean? It's not the Inquisitors may, but he wouldn't. So they learn about her as well, and she has to feel comfortable being a teacher, being somebody who walked away. So there are things for her to deal with too, and issues for her to get over. It's not just, oh, and here's the things that I bring to the table that I can teach you. But when she does, it's hyper important. I mean, you got to remember, the guy who just beat the crap out of me and Ezra is the guy that taught her how to fight. So nobody knows her. Nobody knows Vader the way Ahsoka knows Annie. Like, it's just not. There couldn't be a better teacher to help us protect ourselves. Obviously, we can't beat him. You know what I mean? And and nobody historically, but nobody on the team would ever, you know, even want to do that. Even if the other movies hadn't been made, because you want Vader to be scary. You don't want him to be a pushover. He needs to be the scariest. He needs to be scarier than Darth Maul was. significantly. And I feel in Siege of Lothal, we did a really fantastic job of doing that. Of course, when you have James Earl Jones, it helps. But, you know, story-wise and the way they animated and the level of destruction he was able to resist and inflict, I thought really put him, you know, so many notches above that even kids watching are going to be like, yo, you're not beating that guy ever. And that's how they should feel. Or we screwed up, you know what I mean? But I don't think we did. I thought we did a really good job with it. And throughout the season, you know, Kanan's not getting cheap shots in on Darth Vader. No chance.
Yeah, I saw, like, I've heard a fair number of people call Vader in Rebels Vader at his throat crushingest.
There you go. I'll take that all day. Or throat cuttingness, considering what he was going to do to Ezra.
Yeah.
I definitely agree. Siege of Lothal definitely set up Vader to be very much the bad guy that he needs to be.
Yeah, and I mean, at the end of that, we're not winning. You know what I mean? Like, it's not a feel-good episode. You know what I mean? So, yeah. The season, it's going to have moments. It's going to have, you know, puffer pig moments that to bring some levity throughout the season, because every show needs that. If Clone Wars, I know people always want to crap on Jar Jar, but if Clone Wars, the animated series, didn't have Jar Jar, it's the most depressing series in the history of television. Like, if Shakespeare doesn't create Falstaff, then Shakespeare's a moody. Like, you have to have levity. You have to have irreverence. Like, what do people get so confused? Like, what do they think the C-3PO purpose was in the original trilogy?
Right.
It's exactly the same character. It's the same. Jar Jar and C-3PO are Shaggy and Scooby. Like, they're the exact. They're fools that want to do heroic things, and somehow, accidentally, after Mace Windu does all the work, they're suddenly there and they did something great. And that's Falstaff. That's Shakespeare. That's amazing literature, and people don't recognize it because they're like, well, there wasn't enough blood and guts. And it's like, really, man? Like, really? Yeah. That's like an indie wrestling show where the guy just hits his strongest move 27 times instead of building up to it, and the guy kicks out every time. And you're like, your finishing move sucks, clearly. Like, stop doing that. In WWE, you, like, build up slow, right? It's a chop. It's this. And then it builds up to a body slam and a power slam and off throw. And then all of a sudden, you're a finisher. Oh, my God. And it builds, and it's beautiful. And, you know, but fans in Philadelphia are like, that's a bunch of crap. And they want to see, like, blood and guts. And that's what the hardcore, like, Clone Wars fans would want. You know what I mean? It's like death every week. And it's like, that's not what telling a story is all about. It's not just about cool lightsaber fights. You guys should really try to appreciate what Star Wars actually is. And, you know, most people that I honestly, I can't talk Star Wars with really anyone but people like you on podcasts. Because regular people just don't get it. They're like, oh, yeah, that looked sick, man. And he cut his head off. I'm like, okay. You don't want to know why? Like, I bet that pissed Boba off a little bit. You know, I'd have to put a bomb in a helmet and try to kill Mace's ass. You know what I mean? So,
yeah.
You know, but people don't, you know, they want ESPN highlights. They don't want, you know, the whole game. So it's fine. It's just less attention means for, it just means you miss out on a lot more. That's all.
One thing, again, I don't know if you'll be able to answer this for us, but your wife.
If not, I can dance around it better than anybody in the business.
You did, yeah.
I can give you that Sabine runaround, don't worry.
Yeah.
That was great.
Just do that again.
Are you kidding me? We're going to have people that talk about that for, they're going to debate that.
That's good. I want people talking about it.
What do you think she meant by that? I
yeah,
mean,
they can
oh,
start
yeah.
thinking about what names yeah. will go along with it. And yeah, man. That's good, though. You want people talking about it. And I love when people, I know you're about to ask about Sarah and what role she'll play. I love the people debate that, man. I love that some people think it's Barriss. Some people have gone as far as to say it's Asajj. It's not.
Wow.
My wife would never jack a role from somebody like that. You know how cold-blooded that would be? Like, people are like, it's Barriss. I'm like, yo, don't you think Meredith would be a little pissed off at my wife? Her sister's kids and my kids go to the same school. Like, Meredith and Sarah are cool. She's not going to just jack her role like that. Like, sorry. Like, what? Why would Dave do something like that? Like, everyone thinks Dave's a jerk. Dave's, like, the nicest guy on Earth and, like, hooks his friends up with sweet jobs on Star Wars. Like,
he just loves his secrets.
Yeah, if you've worked for him once, he wants you to work for him forever. Like, he wouldn't just hose somebody like that. The only time someone else has voiced a character is if someone was unavailable, someone didn't want to do it, or somebody got really sick and could no longer voice something. Like, yeah, right. That's the only, those are the only three scenarios in which Dave would be comfortable with that. But go ahead and ask your question, please.
Well, I was just wondering, like, what can you tell us about her role in season two? If anything.
Not much, man. I mean, I don't even want to say if she's good or evil. Mm-hmm. I mean, some people have seen what they feel is a female Inquisitor, and they've speculated that Sarah's that. There's a ton of characters that people have not seen, so they're not able to speculate that if she could be anyone else but that. So, I mean, if you want to speculate in that direction, I can speculate, but I'll just be giving you a bunch of BS. Like, I'm not going to tell you the truth. But I'll tell you I'm lying. It'll be entertaining. I can tell you the Wookiee story if that's what you want. There's not too much I can say. I can say this. Her character and my character have plenty of scenes together. And she's in a position to take orders and execute them, not to give orders. And that's really, as generic as that is, man, like, I just, to tell you anything would be to spoil a fantastic surprise when people hear her voice for the first time, mm-hmm. and the character it comes out of. Like, I really think, like I did with keeping Vader a secret, and clearly ABC disagreed, and Hasbro or whatever, Mattel, whatever toy company released it to. But, you know, I really believe in surprises. I think they're awesome, and I never want to know how the magician did the trick, because once you know, it really sucks. So, like, oh, you can't levitate, and you didn't make anything disappear. It's great. You're just a dork. So, you know, I really want it to be special, but, you know, you can at least now know that she's, you know, she's not an officer, and her character and my character definitely have a ton of stuff together. So she's not just some, like, ancillary character that people be like, oh, it was a one-off. No, she's in the whole, she's through the whole season. She may even be in season three. I honestly don't know, because we haven't finished season two yet. So I don't know if she lives, if she dies, if she kills people, if she kills dogs. I have no idea. Like, I have no idea if her dog gets killed. Like, I really don't. We have our last two episodes coming up, and our final, like, ensemble cast. This will be, like, interesting info people can speculate on. Our ensemble cast, where we all record together, was last week, and the rest of our final season of season two is really just me and two other characters that people are familiar with from season one, and some season two characters that are going to make people, I'm going to curse on your podcast, or they're going to make people in their pants. when I first found out our finale and what was going down, I my reaction was much as it is now. So, it's going to really blow people away. I haven't even read it yet. I just know what's going to happen. And, the waiting is the worst part. Like, you guys think you hate waiting? try knowing how sick something is, just wanting to see some animation and not getting to. Like, it's brutal, man. It's brutal. And granted, I get to see it before you guys do, but I should. I worked on the damn thing. I should get to see it. So that's, you know what I mean? Like, the season two finale is crazy. Like, absolutely crazy. And it'll be, this isn't a spoiler, we'll probably do this every year. Our beginning and end are always going to be an hour long. So it'll always be in movie format in that regard.
That's awesome.
And so this season will be no different. And it'll be, you think that Siege of Lothal was good? Like, nah. Like, we have a couple storylines within season two in a Clone Wars way where it's like a block of three episodes that tell one amazing story. We do so many of those this year. People are going to feel like they're watching movies. It's really special and cool. And Henry Gilroy's been our main writer this whole season. He came in at the end of season one, so he's had his fingerprints all over this season, which is always good for a writer's confidence, which is good for actors as far as continuity goes and having a familiar voice in there. And where we're at now from season two to season one is, and granted, we're given more latitude now, right? Because we sort of proved ourselves season one to the network and studio. I mean, they still have, Dave still has, you know, people that he has to answer to at Disney. They did spend $8 billion to buy the rights to Star Wars. So they do want to know what's going on, and they want to have their fingerprints on the material as well. But, you know, the longer we keep somebody in our family, the longer we, you know, the closer someone can get to tenure, the better the show is, because we have consistency and we have that singular voice. Even though it's multiple people, it's Carrie, it's Henry, and it's Dave, and those, that sort of triumvirate is really the voice that keeps the show safe, that makes sure Vader's not a punk, that makes sure we don't overuse legendary characters like Lando Calrissian or Darth friggin' Vader or Ahsoka Tano or the numerous surprises in season two. Or Yoda, for crying out loud. You know what I mean? So yeah. It's and Frank Oz voicing him. I mean, so it's season two is under the same watch that season one was under, and I think our second season is much better than our first, and I loved our first season. Yeah. There was one episode where I was like, okay, I understood what some people were complaining about. I got it, but man, we had to give the girls a story. You know what I mean? Like, and when guys were complaining that there wasn't enough dudes in it, I'm like, you're just young and sexist and don't know it. But boys grow up. It's when a grown man starts saying that I'm like, dude, you're an idiot. Get out of here. Boys eventually they evolve and grow up into, you know, something average and understand things a little bit better. But yeah, I understood a little bit of the criticism on that. I thought people went a little extreme, but whatever. Season two is very, very, it's much richer. It's much deeper. We don't have to tell as many stories in 21 minutes because we can tell it over three episodes, which really gives a writer, that's where all these characters are born. It's where all these worlds are born. It's where all those sweet lines, like, I'm about to let everyone in on the secret. You know what I mean? Like, it's where all that stuff is born and bred. And when you're not forced to squeeze it into the length of a sitcom, your stories can't help but be better. As long as you don't get carried away and get, you know, the original season of Doctor, or the original series Doctor Who, like season four, when they were just like all over the place. And you're like, yo, you're not even on the same television show anymore, man. What's going on? And they weren't trying to be funny, and it was getting funny. So, you know, we're not there. We haven't jumped the shark. We don't have, like, you know, there hasn't been any goofiness or corniness. And if we're fortunate enough to be on five or six seasons, I'm sure we'll get there. but we're not close to it yet.
Right.
I got time for one more if you guys more. Got a good one.
Oh, crap.
it can be a bad one. It can be good
or
bad.
That puts pressure on us then.
Oh, man.
Give me your worst one then. Let's just make it.
Oh, worst one? No, you don't want our worst one, Brent.
You don't want
We got some that were just...
What's Kanan's favorite color?
we had a lot of those.
Yeah. Like, well, here's one you definitely don't have to answer. But yeah, one dude asked if your wife really is a vampire slayer.
Yes, she is.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, now, isn't that awesome? Like, he has an opportunity to, like, ask someone. And I look, if he's young, then I get it. But
I don't think he's young.
I was going to say, if he's watching, he's probably older. But, like, you get a chance to talk to somebody who is happily and successfully retired, who didn't spend all their money on Mercedes and cocaine, who has a successful marriage, and instead of asking any question in the world on, hey, how do I get a piece of that? You ask, does she really kill vampires? Think about that. Like, he had a chance to ask anything, and that's what he could have been like, hey, man, what's your secret? What'd you invest in? And I would have told him, I'd have said, hey, everybody needs to eat. I invested in agriculture and grocery transportation. And then he would have had some valuable information that could have afforded him the kind of life that I live, where I can just chill and talk to you guys on a podcast and do sweet Star Wars things and play with my kids and play video games all day. But no, he wanted to know. So we're going to really let's dive into this and let's explore this, okay? So I really want to address this. So now it, let's under the premise that vampires actually do exist. let's take the strain argument and say, or the Blade 2 argument and say it's a virus, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what do you think Sarah would have to be? Like, it's not just can she kick butt, right? Anybody can kick butt. Blade
right.
kick butt. They're still vampires. You have to be able to actually destroy the gene that causes the thirst for blood. But if you do that and they actually need blood, then you're literally committing genocide. So it's a tricky line when you're just like saying, I'm going to destroy an entire species. Like, that, it's a very human thing to do, right? Because we want to kill and destroy everything we can.
Pretty much.
But unless the vampires are coming straight at you, I feel like we should really sort of just live and let live. I think a vampire would probably let you know in a lot of ways that you were going to be dinner. And it's easy to stay away from. I saw an interview with the vampire. I know what they look like. I know how they behave. I avoid that. I avoid those people. If that guy has long hair, I avoid him. Because I know that there's potential he could be a vampire.
Well,
so I hope that this,
Ian,
I hope this answered your listener's question. And I hope I addressed it clearly enough. I don't have all the answers. And he may have found the one thing I don't know. But I'm doing my best. All right, now you have time for one more real quick.
Okay. All right, so real question. I have long hair. Can we still hang out?
Wow. That's what you're going to spend your coin on.
And you're up super late, too, so that's two strikes already.
Yeah, we've probably reached that silly part of the podcast.
Oh, we got one more.
We got one more.
If you
question.
Wear Sunblock 3000, you're in a lot of trouble. And I know you're a vampire, for sure.
We do have
or a ginger.
One person that... We do have one person that wanted to know, or they state, we know you're a Mando fan. What color would your armor be and why?
Mm.
Oh, man.
It's a hard question.
It is hard.
You're asking the tough question.
Yeah, this is that's
a good
question.
We got time
for
one more good one. So.
This is better than, do you really know Scooby-Doo? that was on your list too, though, wasn't it?
Yeah, I did ask that.
You know, Pre Vizsla sort of defines the Mandalorians to me when he was sort of lean and hungry, and when he was full on evil. But his sort of discipline and style, I always dug. He's worn multiple armors, I think, from... I remember him wearing blue the first time he sort of dealt with Obi-Wan. But I feel like the set he wore when he fought Darth Maul is probably... And I think that was silver and black. Very Raider Nation of me, even though I'm not a Raider guy. but I definitely like that. I have to have the black blade, first of all.
Yeah.
So the armor is kind of secondary, but at least silver and black would match, and not like your picture here that I'm seeing on the Skype. I would reverse it. Like, you're black and silver. I would go
right.
On the front of the mask looks kind of bronze, which is dope. But I would go black outline, silver armor, and then I don't know what I'd do on the on the front face shield there. The bronze thing's kind of cool. Maybe I'd go blue and give Vizsla like the full tribute. But yeah, probably silver and black, Raider style.
Awesome.
Yeah, that was like the Vizsla. I tell Dave this all the time. The Vizsla Darth Maul lightsaber scene is, in my opinion, the best lightsaber scene out of any of the Star Wars content that's ever really been provided. That scene was like the perfect example, and it's never been accomplished in a Star Wars film ever. This unbelievable debate between technology and Super Sith ninja skills. And you literally see this sort of chess match where Vizsla's technology is dominating until Maul is able to start to, piece by piece, destroy and negate each piece of technology that's beating him. And when he does equalize it, so to speak, he still has the Force, which is cheating. But once he sort of handles the technology side of things and takes damage in the process, the fight is over. And I always thought it was this, like, it just felt like a boxing match of like the old days, like an old Ali match where like Ali and Foreman were fighting and Ali's just taking shot after just bomb after bomb. And Foreman was a huge man back then. And he wasn't the chubby, lovable George Foreman we all know now. He was buff. He was angry. He was young. and most importantly, he was hungry, and he was just smashing Ali, but Ali just had this jab and was just sort of picking him apart with the jab, and it wasn't technology he was fighting, it was youth and strength, but he used his sort of Sith ninja skills, which was age and experience, to negate everything Foreman did, and by, I think it was the eighth round, a boxing historian will correct me and know what's up. All of a sudden, George was out of gas, and he didn't have anything left, and Ali just annihilated him. And that, to me, was the Vizsla-Mol fight. So Pre-Vizsla died like a stud. Like, for all the bad stuff he did, to go out like that and be like, you know, only the strong shall rule. Like, that's great. Like, he died willingly, wantingly. And if you got to see the DVD director's cut, you get to see his head roll off. So like the hardcore fans are like, yeah, death and destruction. But yeah, so that's why I would pick his armor, because to me he was my favorite Mandalorian, and he's got a Z in his name like me, so that's cool.
So what I liked about that fight was, like, I think for the only time that you ever see it in Star Wars, it's the only time the two combatants really want to kill each other. Like, there's no, like, yeah. One guy's kind of holding back, like, oh, maybe we can redeem the Sith Lord who's killed half the galaxy.
Well, Obi definitely wants to kill Maul when he's...
Oh, that time, yeah.
When he's with Savage and Asajj. Like, so he's had his moments, but yes, I would agree with you. Yeah. It was also one of the few times where two bad guys were sort of fighting against each other at the highest level possible, and...
Yeah.
And, like, fans of Star Wars are having now to pick who their favorite is of two guys that we're not supposed to love. So it gave this whole sort of new dynamic of, like, you know, which side are you on? And, like, all the fans of Jedi go Force, so they're picking Sith, which is literally the opposite of everything they hold dear and true. And, like, hardcore fans go Vizsla, right? Because he doesn't need the Force. He does shit hardcore and he's badass. And you kind of see, like, everyone's evil side come out to support their version of a bad guy. I loved it.
Yeah, that was a great part. Yeah.
Great storyline too, man.
Oh,
great,
yeah. Oh yeah, no, like, naturally, this club, you know, we love that whole anything that happened on Mandalore, we're all about.
It may come as a surprise to you, but yes, things that are related to Mandalorians.
Yeah, well, you guys get some love in season two, so you should have that to look forward to.
Oh man.
and we got, like I said, we had some really cool actors coming in this year playing some cool parts, and you know, one of them may be in that realm, and when you guys hear the voice, you know, it's somebody that I hope we get to work with a lot more of, because this person, I ain't saying boy or girl, stayed in the booth, you know, the entire episode and really just played with us and went off book a couple times and challenged me a couple times, and I really respond to that. I love when people just kind of want to see what happens. And this is a capable enough and strong enough and experienced enough and credited enough actor to pull something like that off, so it worked really well, and you guys are going to love the episode. You really will. I probably shouldn't have said any of that, but you can. They're not going to fire me. Don't worry about it.
All right,
guys. Well, thank you very much for having me on. When the season comes out and you're a couple episodes in and we got some fun stuff to talk about, man, let's do it again.
Yes.
That'd be fantastic.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
And that's about all the time we have for this episode of Keldabi Talk Radio. Thanks again to Freddie Prinze Jr. for taking the time coming down to talk to us. He was awesome. And on behalf of myself, Thaxos, and Misha Kitty, have a good one.
This has been a production of the Mandalorian Mercs Costume Club. If you'd like to learn more about the topics discussed on today's show, please visit www.mandalorianmercs.com. The Mandalorian Mercs is a worldwide Star Wars costuming organization comprised of and operated by Star Wars fans. Star Wars, its characters, costumes, and all associated items are intellectual property of Lucasfilm. Copyright 2009 Lucasfilm Limited. We hope you enjoyed our show, and we'd love to hear your feedback. Please email podcast@mercs.firespray.net. Until next time, happy hunting.
They could, but...
Fine, fine. Goodbye, everyone! There. You happy now?
Yes.
Take it easy.